ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
G'day, Hamish McDonald here. I'm a journalist and I've spent the last 18 months deep in the dark world of mis- and disinformation. So what is the difference? Well, disinformation has malicious intent behind it. It's designed specifically to deceive using false information, kind of like propaganda. Whereas misinformation is false information that might be shared by someone who believed it to be true. So who's behind this modern form of propaganda? Find out by streaming The Matter of Facts now on ABC iView.
He was threatening to wipe out a whole civilization. Then, about an hour before his deadline, Donald Trump announced a ceasefire deal had been struck with Iran. They'll now spend 2 weeks negotiating a peace plan, but so far it seems like there's little they can agree on. Today, Barbara Slavin, Distinguished Fellow at the Stimson Centre, on what comes next. I'm Sydney Peed. On Gadigal Land, Sydney, this is ABC News Daily. Barbara, my goodness, what a couple of days it's been. If you take him at his word, Donald Trump was about to blow up all of Iran's power stations and bridges, but then 1 hour before the deadline, he pulls back.
Donald Trump says he's agreed to suspend attacks on Iran for a period of 2 weeks, subject to Iran reopening the Strait of Hormuz.
The US president had earlier threatened that a whole civilization will die if Iran hadn't struck a deal with the US by a deadline at the end of the day local time.
He has put out this social media post saying that we have received the 10-point proposal from Iran and believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate.
Tehran says the Strait of Hormuz will be open during the talks. Iran's National Security Council says it will allow safe passage through the crucial oil corridor. Global oil prices have fallen sharply following the announcement.
It added that this does not mean the war has ended and that Iran will only accept an end to the war once the details of its 10-article plan are finalised.
What's been agreed to at this stage? There is a 10-point plan, but Iran and the United States might have a different idea about what this ceasefire deal is.
Well, all we know is that there is supposed to be a 2-week ceasefire. That's all that's been agreed to. We don't know if there's been agreement on any other issue, whether it's nuclear, missile, proxies, any of the other issues, sanctions. Iran has been demanding compensation for the incredible damage that's been done to the country over the last 5.5 weeks. So there's going to be a lot that has to be filled in. This may be just a pause. It may not be permanent.
Yeah, because there's a lot in that 10-point plan released by Iran that the United States has said it would never agree to.
Yeah, and vice versa. The U.S. has made demands on the Iranians that the Iranians say they would never agree to. Mm. And, you know, no trust, a very bitter experience of being attacked in the past while negotiating. So this is all very, very fragile.
And what do we know about how this deal was struck?
We know that the Pakistanis have been frantically trying to find an off-ramp. They have been very exposed because of their dependence on imported liquid natural gas in particular, which they've been running out of. Very worried about this war spreading even further than it already has. And so Trump cites the Pakistani prime minister and the head of the Pakistani army in particular for having facilitated this. They've been passing messages back and forth between the United States and Iran for several weeks now. So all credit to the Pakistanis for this effort.
And this comes just days after this escalating rhetoric from Donald Trump, threatening that Iran will be bombed back to the Stone Age and a whole civilization will die.
Donald Trump saying Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. He added, "Open the f***ing strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch." Rounding off his missive with the phrase, "Praise be to Allah."
"With every bridge in Iran will be decimated by 12 o'clock tomorrow night, where every power plant in Iran will be out of business, burning exploding and never to be used again. I mean, complete demolition.
Well, you know, we've gotten used to vulgar and apocalyptic tweets from Donald Trump, but I would have to say these were particularly egregious. I mean, they were breathtaking. I think it's the first time he's threatened to destroy a country of 93 million people, yeah.
For Trump to follow through would have been a remarkable escalation in the war. But did Trump win here? Did all that bluster work? Did it force a deal, do you think?
No, I wouldn't call this victory. I mean, Trump miscalculated badly when he started this war. He thought it would be quick and easy, that a strike that killed off the top leadership of the country would cause Iran to capitulate to U.S. maximalist demands on the nuclear program and other issues. And of course, that didn't happen. Iran had a plan too, perhaps more of a plan than Donald Trump. And it retaliated very effectively against its neighbors, against Israel. And of course, it demonstrated its control over the Strait of Hormuz, which is its geographic trump card, if you don't mind using the phrase.
Is it possible that Donald Trump never intended to follow through on those threats, which, as many legal experts have pointed out, would have been war crimes?
Yeah, would have been war crimes for sure. I think he would have carried out very, very heavy bombing. The U.S. already, over the last couple of days, has really been pummeling the country, and so has Israel.
The clock is ticking. This strike in Iran, just kilometres away from the country's only nuclear power plant. And the U.S. president is warning the next strikes could hit the facility itself.
The United States attacked Karg Island, the centre of Iran's oil industry, while Israel announced it had struck Iran's railway and some bridges.
So it might not have been quite every bridge and every power plant, but he might have gone after some very, very serious civilian targets in the country and caused a lot more damage and a lot more death.
Iran has responded to Trump's social media post, saying it's decided at the highest level that Iran will conduct 2 weeks of negotiations in Islamabad with the American side. They'll be pretty cautious about negotiating with the Americans, won't they, given what's happened the last time they negotiated with the Americans?
Yeah, well, the U.S. has now started wars with Iran twice in the middle of negotiations. So the Iranians certainly are extremely mistrustful and, you know, with good reason, but they are looking at this as a victory. I'm just looking at Iranian state TV announced Trump had accepted Iran's terms to end the war, marking a, quote, humiliating retreat, unquote. Mm. So they will spin this obviously in their favor. The question is whether a more permanent agreement can be reached or whether this is just a pause.
Well, before the ceasefire, the Iranian regime had declared the strait would never return to its former state. It was planning to charge ships to use it. And indeed, as part of this ceasefire, Tehran is demanding it be allowed to charge ships a fee to pass through.
That's right. Iran is still in control of the Strait of Hormuz, so it will be up to Iran to decide who gets to pass through the strait. Iranians have allowed certain countries to send shipments through, and of course they've been charging some rather hefty sums, essentially tolls, in order to get through. Will they let all their neighbors now export oil and natural gas through the Strait of Hormuz? Will there be any attacks on shipping, or will they all be able to pass safely? We don't know whether they will continue to do that. What we know is that Donald Trump blinked, and that is a good thing.
And so really, in terms of relieving the pressure on the global oil supply, what does this ceasefire mean for that?
We're not clear. I mean, I think it will certainly reduce the pressure on prices. Prices will certainly go down as a result. But there's still going to be a lot of problems with supplies, a lot of shortages. And of course, there's been a lot of damage done to infrastructure that's going to take a long time to repair. Natural gas facilities, oil refineries that have been hit. So I think it's going to take years for the damage to be repaired, assuming this is the end of the war and not just a pause.
And what do you think Iran does next? Will it back down? And is there a risk that Iran will control the Strait of Hormuz forever?
Well, it does control the strait. Geography cannot be changed. To prevent that from happening would require a massive military force, even larger than the one the United States has assembled. So, I mean, it was always unrealistic to think that you could you could force the Iranians to back down from their control of the strait. No, there will have to be a new agreement, a new arrangement on how shipping will be handled. And Iran will obviously have a major say in that. On the one hand, they do have a stronger position as a result of the war. On the other hand, they have suffered catastrophic damage. And there is so much work they're going to have to do to repair what has already been destroyed. Residential properties, schools, power plants, refineries, oil storage sites, etc.
Barbara, who do you believe is in command in Iran right now? And what are they trying to achieve? Because despite all the assassinations, the Islamic regime remains in place, and there's been no uprising that Trump called for at the start of the war.
Yeah, the regime remains incredibly unpopular, and there was hope among some that U.S. and Israeli attacks would actually bring about the demise of the regime. That's certainly what Trump thought was going to happen. So I wouldn't say that the regime has been strengthened by this, but people have now seen the consequences of war, and I think have been sobered by that. It probably will be a while before people will be willing to come out in the streets. And we should say that the regime has been executing people who were involved in the January protests, even as this war has been going on. So you ask who's in charge? It is a collective leadership, veterans of the Islamic Republic, many of them veterans of the Iran-Iraq War, who are in charge. They are hardline individuals who are committed to the survival of this form of government. You know, my fear is, frankly, it's going to be even harder to dislodge the government than it was before all of this happened. And it was very difficult even then.
Interesting. And what about Israel? It's also a part of this war. It's agreed to the ceasefire, though there's some dispute as to whether that will include the fighting in Lebanon.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has put out a statement saying while Israel supports the plan, the ceasefire does not include Lebanon. But this contradicts the first points in Iran's 10-point ceasefire plan, which says a complete cessation of the war on Iraq, Lebanon and Yemen.
What's the next step for Israel?
Well, they have done a lot of damage to the country, but I think as the war has gone on, even the Israelis realize that it's had diminishing returns. We actually put up a piece by an Israeli named Chuck Freilich on our website, the Stimson Center Middle East Perspectives website, where Israelis are basically saying that it's been military success but strategic failure because the regime is still there. The war with Lebanon is not going particularly well. Israelis are still having missiles rain down on their heads in northern Israel from Lebanon. And people are tired. They're exhausted. The military is exhausted from constant warfare. So I think the Israelis will not mind the fact that Trump has now called a halt for a couple of weeks and hopefully will not press him to resume the war when the ceasefire is over.
So what do you think, Barbara, at this stage, who do you feel is winning the war or at least has the upper hand?
Oh, I don't know that either side has the upper hand. I mean, the U.S. has massive military force. Israel has massive military force and is able to inflict even more damage if it so chooses. The Iranians have leverage because of the Strait of Hormuz. But, you know, with all these people who've been killed, I would not say there is any victor in this. I think it was a pointless war. I think it was undertaken by Donald Trump without sufficient thought to what the consequences would be, not just for the region, but for the world at large. You know, the thing is, he never learns his lesson. I mean, will he learn something from this? Will he not try this again? Will he decide he wants to invade Cuba tomorrow? I mean, he's a very, very mercurial guy who operates according to his instincts and does not value expertise. So, you know, no victors as far as I see from this.
So, Barbara, are we closer to a lasting peace now or just as far away as ever?
It's the Middle East. You know, it can always get worse. No.
Oh, no.
There is no lasting peace in a region that has so many unsolved injustices. While all this is happening, Benjamin Netanyahu is still trying to destroy the Israeli judiciary system. The settlers are still killing people on the West Bank and taking over their farms. Many, many grievances that still exist, many reasons for instability. So, you know, in the Middle East, all you ever get, frankly, is a pause between wars. I've learned that over time.
Barbara Slavin is a fellow at the Stimson Center in Washington and a lecturer in international affairs at George Washington University. Audio production for this episode by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sydney Peed. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.